My name is Bob Whitaker, and the name of this program is The Untrained Eye. The reason it's called The Untrained Eye has to do with an English sense of humor. This is not Scottish, it is not Welsh, it is English. There's an organization in London called the Flat Earth Society, dedicated to the proposition that despite what everybody says, the world is actually flat. Back around 1960, the United States sent its first satellite around the Earth, taking pictures of it, of the spherical Earth. And the ambassador thought it would be interesting to have the head of the British Flat Earth Society, of the English, sorry, Flat Earth Society, come by and take a look at those pictures. That gentleman took a look at the pictures, thanked the ambassador, and said, "It is amazing how, to the untrained eye, the Earth looks round," which is an English sense of humor. The problem is, we are presently ruled by people who have trained eyes. No matter what evidence they're presented with, they see a flat Earth, they see exactly what they want to see. What is amazing is that they get away with it. Not only do they get away with it, they get paid for it. One of the best examples of the trained eye is the Sovietologist of the 1980s. The Soviet Union was about to collapse in 1980, but nobody noticed. Nobody predicted it. Now remember, we're talking about people who, in and outside the universities, people who, inside and outside the government, had cost taxpayers and the rest of us several million dollars each to train, and they were our recognized experts on everything about the Soviet Union. But in plain English, they didn't really know anything about it. The Soviet Union disappeared during the 1980s. Not one single Sovietologist had the slightest inkling that the Soviet Union would cease to be. So what happened to the Sovietologists? Well, a lot of them have been promoted. They're studying Russia now. A lot of them are on nice fat pensions. But none of them ever got blamed for the fact that they didn't notice that the Soviet Union was about to go. I will add parenthetically that every time I say this, somebody says, "Well, somebody did predict the fall of the Soviet Union." I always ask them for a citation. I have read and read and read. There are no citations. All the Sovietologists, all the officials, all the experts believed that the Soviet Union would last forever. Lots of people said that there was an international communist conspiracy that was going to rule the world. That was on the extreme right. On the left, there were those who said that the Soviet economy was growing wildly. I remember in my graduate economics that I was studying UN statistics on what were euphemistically called the centrally planned economies, communist economies, and every single report showed that they were going through the roof. They were growing wildly, they were doing wonderfully, and the Soviet Union looked absolutely indestructible. Then it disappeared. The problem with the Soviet Union was not just that it was evil, but it was silly. The idea that a bunch of bureaucrats can control and own the economy and plan it and produce goods and services and growth and all of the other good things that all the UN reports said that they produced is nonsense. But the trained eye is totally unable to see silliness or nonsense. And this was where the Sovietologists failed. This was where the anti-communists failed. They did not realize that they were dealing with silliness. They were dealing with a great Marxist theology. They were dealing with an international plot of geniuses they were dealing with the intellectuals, they were dealing with the workers' revolt. What they didn't know was that they were dealing with what I call an idiocracy. A bunch of idiots who are ruling by pure, unadulterated force in the name of a system that made no sense, that did not work, that no sane person would think could possibly work. You can't deal with reality if you don't face reality. And this is precisely the problem we face in dealing with our established religion of political correctness in America today. We are dealing not with a group of geniuses or great intellectuals, or what we're dealing with is an idiocracy, just like the Soviet Union. The Soviet idiocracy existed only on the basis of terror. Our present religion of political correctness exists on the basis of terror. The instant that terror is removed, the system begins to come apart. We had always thought that if the Soviet Union were to fall, it would be because there would be a revolt or an invasion or even a nuclear war. But the way the Soviet Union actually fell was something of an anticlimax. What happened was that Gorbachev started glasnost and took his foot off the neck of the Russian people and the people of the other Soviet republics. The minute that happened, people began to talk about how ridiculous the system was. There was a joke during Gorbachev's rule, early in his rule, that went around underground in Russia that said, Saudi Arabia went communist last year. This year, there was a shortage of sand. In other words, it was pretty obvious to everybody that this stupid system didn't work. Now, even liberals today don't like to be called liberals because this system isn't working. And I think, as with the Soviet Union, that the collapse of this system is going to be to seem anticlimactic, because it's a silly system based upon the American version of terror. Lenin began the Red Terror in 1918. As soon as the communist system was imposed, it was backed by terror. Stalin came along and continued the same terror. And in fact, the last real terrorist ruler was Brezhnev. After Brezhnev, they had what they called a gerontocracy, a rule by the old. They had one fellow who was made the head of the Soviet Union. I think he lived for about a week after that. This period of the gerontocracy, the rule by the old people, has been completely forgotten, but it is critically important because it marked the breaking point of the old Soviet Union. The old order was dying out, and Gorbachev took power, and this marked a new age when the younger generation apparently thought that this system made some kind of sense and could continue to exist without terror. All of this relates directly to the present established religion of political correctness. We all know that the huge programs of criminal rehabilitation don't work. We know our border policies don't work. We know we can't continue to ignore race forever. The only thing that keeps people from saying this is the American brand of terror. In the Soviet Union, they threw you in the gulag. In Europe, if you question political correctness, they put you in prison. In America, they ruin you. But it's still based on terror. And what is important to remember is that once the terror is removed, once people begin to talk freely, this system is going to go fast. What happened with the Soviet Union was that it went so fast, nobody knew what to do next. There was an enormous power vacuum. The Russian mafia came in, a lot of other powers came in, and everything had just fallen apart. Our present system is going to do much the same thing. Pat Buchanan's Death of the West was a real breakthrough. A lot of the statements you hear from time to time are real breakthroughs. The program you're listening to right now is a real breakthrough. The collapse of the Soviet Union really began with the Samizdats. Samizdat was literally a self-publication. These were illegal publications, tiny little publications, that were published privately, which was, of course, illegal in the Soviet Union. The Samizdat that I am producing right now is not actually illegal, but if you get caught listening to it or repeating it, you will be afraid that you will be ruined financially, that your future will be ruined. We all know that. We all know that we live under a system of terror. It is not prison, but it is just as bad. That is to say, if you are quoted as having said something politically incorrect 20 years ago, you can be denied any appointment, any job. The Supreme Court has actually ruled that a person who is a communist or a far leftist cannot be fired for his political views, but an extreme rightist can be fired for his political views. So what you're listening to right now is essentially a Samizdat, a self-publication. It doesn't have the backing of the establishment, but it has the sort of importance that the truth disseminated privately can have, as we saw in the case of the Soviet Union. The picture of the world and the present situation as I am presenting it is altogether different from that other people will present to you. The reason the grim-faced Sovietologists never saw that the Soviet Union was about to go was because they took it seriously. They saw all its power. It controlled about half the world. If you go all the way from Vladivostok to Checkpoint Charlie and all the way to the Berlin Wall, the thing looked incredibly powerful. It looked like it could never just disappear. Now, most people who tell you about the present system will tell you very grim tales about its power, the genius of the people standing behind it, how it must be taken very, very seriously. But what I am saying is that we are ruled by idiots. The practical side of this is that I feel that if we push it hard, push the present system hard, it will fall to pieces. I have identified a particular place where it is especially vulnerable, and that is the universities. In fact, the university system today looks a lot like the Soviet system did near the end. The simple fact was the Soviet Union was not producing. It was surviving on oil. And that was about all they had, oil and poverty. They had up walls to keep people in. They were the only poverty-stricken white countries on the face of the earth, and they became aware of it. Under Stalin and Lenin, these facts could be kept under wraps. Stalin had a very simple solution to people who came back from Europe and said that all these shortages and forced labor and terror did not exist in other white countries. Stalin simply killed those who came back from abroad. But after Brezhnev's death and during the period of the gerontocracy, information could no longer be kept away from the Soviet peoples. So what happened? The terror was removed, the system was given a hard push, and it collapsed. I want to give this system a hard push. There are tens of millions of young people who are presently paying off their student loans. Now, this doesn't sound like a great conspiracy theory. It doesn't have all that excitement and so forth. It is simply the fact that the system isn't working. If you ask almost any of those millions or tens of millions of young people whether they got cheated or not by the university system, they will tell you, yes, I did get cheated. It was a waste of 4 years of my life and the next 10 years, when I should have been saving up for a home or a family, have to be spent paying off all these costs that keep rising at the universities. All this tuition, all the fees, and so forth. Then there are tens of millions more people who are quietly infuriated at the university system in the United States. The fact is that if you think, if you're any young person who is thinking of having a family, you have to take into account tuition for their college education. That is part of planning for your family, and these tuition costs are rising exponentially. The predictions are that they will be terribly high, but we all know that they will end up being even higher than those projections. So either the university system is going to create tens of millions of young people, more young people, who will have to pay off all of these costs as student loans, or the parents will have to pay them off. That constitutes a pretty dissatisfied bunch. In Russia, what really brought things down was that the standard of living was so bad and people became aware that other white countries didn't live like that. You remember the joke about how Saudi Arabia became communist last year, and this year there's a shortage of sand. The whole system became a joke. It was just a joke that no one was allowed to tell. The university system is, in fact, a joke. It is a very nasty joke. I think if we got on the campuses, or if we started a revolt, the university system, we would have millions, tens of millions, of natural allies. But this doesn't satisfy those who want to bring the whole system down by guerrilla warfare or some other dramatic means. My view of the world is that we need to push hard and the system will come down. A lot of good people tell me these people see a lot of geniuses at the top. They see what the Sovietologists saw in 1980. What I see is a house that is begging to be burned down. A revolt against academia would not stop with academia. And in fact, once it gets started, we will not be able to control it. We have a system where there are 2.5 million lawyers, 1% of the entire population of the United States is made up of lawyers. It is not entirely coincidental that approximately the same 1% of the American population is behind bars. Our legal system is not working very well. Every one of those people behind bars represents incalculable damage to the citizens. Now, do you really believe that if there is a revolt concentrated on academia, that it is going to stop with academia? I don't. I think this is a system that is teetering. Everybody knows it's absurd. It needs a push. The vulnerable spot that I identified in my book, Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood, you can get it at readbob.com, is the university system, which already has tens of millions of enemies. Parents who have to look forward to paying their children's tuition, former students who are paying off their student loans. This does not require that we suddenly make people aware of a problem or expose a conspiracy that will cause people to become enraged. The people are already enraged. They just don't know what to do about it. You remember the joke about Saudi Arabia and the sand shortage? Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood, is more like that joke than it is like the huge tomes that our side puts out exposing conspiracies. It's mostly ridicule. It's short, and it explains in extreme detail, I hope entertaining detail, why I refer to academia and the entire religion of political correctness as a rule by idiots, as an idiocracy, not as a conspiracy of brilliant minds. Once this is exposed, once this sort of thing gets talked about, it will be very destructive to the entire system. People will begin to ask, why is it we have worshipped all these idiot professors all this time? The next question will be, why have we worshipped all of these judges all of this time? Why have we given these lawyers all of this power? Why have we allowed the government to make us helpless with gun control laws? We all know that none of the slaughters that caused gun control laws would have taken place if one single honest citizen in the restaurant or on the schoolyard had had a weapon of his own. You know that. I know that. It's the sort of thing you're not allowed to say. You'll get ridiculed for it. But once people are allowed to talk about these things, the whole system comes into question. That's why I am, you might say, almost desperate to get those tens of millions of young people who won't have families and of young people who are paying off their college debts to take aim at the professors. Because the professors don't do anything for us. You know, and I know, that all a professor does for the public is to sign a piece of paper that says, so-and-so took this course and got such-and-such a grade. The rest of a professor's time is spent on what is important to a professor, that is, pleasing other professors. We all know that teaching function professors are supposed to perform is the least important thing in a professor's life. A person has to get a PhD by pleasing professors. A professor gets hired by other professors. A professor in his publish or perish world has to get published. And all the editors are, guess what? Professors. After 7 years, a professor has to get tenure or lose his job. Guess who votes on whether he gets tenure or not? Other professors. Who decides whether a professor gets promoted or not? Other professors. So that's where your money is going. And, as I explain in Why Johnny Can't Thank America's Professor Priesthood, which is available at readbob.com, the result is that we don't have a huge number of brilliant professors. What we have is a bunch of bureaucrats whose sole function is to please other professors. Now, this kind of logic extends to every other part of our present ruling establishment. Lawyers, for example. We all know that lawyers are not that interested in justice. They're interested in representing particular points of view, particular groups. Willie, who has just been convicted for the fifth time, and who the judge knows by his first name. We know that none of this has anything to do with justice, which is why we have a total of well over 5 million people who are lawyers and prisoners, and we have not even started to talk about law enforcement. Look at all the policemen it takes to keep arresting the same people, to fill out all the paperwork. Now, if we do start talking about professors and results, and if we do harness the fury of tens of millions of people, almost all of whom vote, all of them illiterate, do you really think that this questioning is going to stop with the universities? Do you think that the millions of people who are hurt by this legal system of ours, by the judges, do you really think that they are not going to get the hint? No. Once we start a revolt, the gloves will be off and the system will come down. Now, that is my view of the world. Many other people tell me that there's a giant conspiracy and this, that, and the other, and these are geniuses we're dealing with. And that is exactly the point that Why Johnny Can't Think America's Professor Priesthood deals with. These are not geniuses. This is a silly system. It's an absurd system. It's a system that needs questioning, and the questioning will destroy it because it is costing people a great deal in every possible way. What we need to do, in my view, is to start a revolt somewhere, to start the questioning somewhere. And the universities are a prime target. They're a great big turkey that is sitting right there ready to be shot. Having spoken about turkeys, I will now turn to chickens. There are a lot of chickens that are coming home to roost these days. One of them is the race issue. Now, before, I did in my first book, A Plague on Both Your Houses, back in 76, I did demand the preservation of the white race and got away with it. But today, in Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood at readbob.com, I lead with the race issue. Because the chickens are coming home to roost. It used to be that the race issue was the strong point of the political left. Conservatives would grovel and fall on the floor, they still do, whenever racism was mentioned. But the old Jim Crow arguments were that the white race was in danger. Well, lo and behold, everybody can see that now. There is a policy of genocide, as I discuss in great detail in Why Johnny Can't Thank America's Professor Priesthood. I explain why there is a program of genocide against whites, and it boils down to the solution to the race, quote, race, unquote, problem is to solve this, quote, race, unquote, problem by massive immigration and integration from the third world. But this race problem does not exist in Africa or Asia. All this immigration and multicultural stuff applies to every white country and only to white countries. That is called genocide. If you were doing the same thing, if you were demanding that Africa take in tens of millions of non-blacks to solve their, quote, race, unquote, problem, and you were not asking any other countries to do that, I don't think it would take long for everybody to see that this was a program of genocide against blacks. Today, all of the old fears, all the old, alarmism, is now fact. Back in 1965, when the National Origins immigration system ended, a lot of people warned that the Third World was going to come pouring into America. The liberals all said that was ridiculous. Edward Kennedy said on the floor of the Senate that if that started to happen, we'd just change the law and stop it. Well, Edward Kennedy is not about to change the law and stop it. And he declares anybody who mentions changing the law and stopping this massive third world immigration a racist. Today, with the backing of the Bush administration, there's a new bill which is sponsored by that same Edward Kennedy and his faithful conservative companion, John McCain, who is always carrying liberal water, to set up a so-called guest worker program. Guest worker programs have never worked, and they never will. Once they come in, they stay. So this program of genocide against whites is something that every respectable conservative and every liberal has to agree on. Otherwise, he's called a racist. And it always boils down to white countries, and only white countries, must bring in large numbers of third worlders. So, instead of avoiding the race issue, I discuss it in Why Johnny Can't Thank America's Professor Priesthood at great length, this program of genocide against whites. It is now one of our strongest points. Now, and Pat Buchanan wrote The Death of the West, which would not have been published even in the 1990s, talking about the disappearance of the white race. All these things are connected, and all of them will come tumbling down together, if I'm right. There's nothing wrong with talking about conspiracies, great powers, and all that sort of thing, but I could use some help on this end, trying to give what I consider this house of cards a push. And I think when we do, we're going to find that we're in the position that so many Russians were in when the system collapsed. Even the anti-communists were astonished when the whole thing came apart and they were faced with planning a post-Soviet Russia. Well, I think we are going to be in much the same position, and I hope that the folks out there will buy my book, and if it, we're going into the second edition, and if those ideas get out there, and they, my ideas do tend to get out there from my other books, we are going to bring this House of Cards down. See you next week.